This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
This is so important. I hear on the media, and I'm sure everyone else out there has seen or heard on the news media, how unions, they just have a bad image on the media, and it's so nice and refreshing to hear the benefits and how it actually can still change a life and make things better when people stand together, when people support each other, and it's not just about the individual. So anyways, we're out of time now, and thank you so much for coming down here. This has been Labor Radio, and for all you listeners out there, have a wonderful night.
Thanks. Good night.
The time is 6:30, and you just got done listening to Labor Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information at ubc156.org.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Karen James. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. My guests are Curtis Bear Cub and Gary Griffin. Yesterday was Father's Day, and Gary and Curtis are dads who recently released from prison, so they'll share their thoughts about reconnecting with their children. And our state legislators are about to vote on House Bill 3194, Oregon's Public Safety Reform Package. And I hope everyone has made their phone calls to Salem to urge their support. Gary and Curtis will talk about testifying in favor of House Bill 3194. And later in the program, we'll hear what's happening in Salem as David Rogers, Executive Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice, gives us an update on House Bill 3194. So welcome, Curtis Bear Cub and Gary Griffin.
Hello.
Thank you very much.
Let's start with when you were released from prison, and in which prison did you spend most of your time? Curtis?
I did a 70-month sentence. The larger portion I did at Snake River Correctional Institution in Ontario. I did my final year here in Portland at Columbia River Correctional Institution.
And Gary?
I did 49 months on a 66-month sentence this time. I didn't do all my time at any one institution. I got the tour of everything the Valley has to offer for incarceration.
When did you both release?
Well, I released in August of 2012, August 20th to be exact.
And I was released March 1st of this year.
So, Curtis, being a dad, did you have a relationship with your children while you were in prison?
No. It was hard for me to stay in contact with my family. They don't make it really easy for you, aside from letters, which I understand are hard to write sometimes because life is hectic when you don't have a stable household. You could put out 100 letters sometimes and maybe get 10 back. But I just didn't get a lot of cooperation from the penitentiary in terms of making it easy for me to afford phone calls.
And what about visits? Why didn't you receive visits from your family?
And that's probably a geographical problem. Snake River is in Ontario, Oregon, which is on the Idaho border.
And your family is?
We are located in Portland here.
It makes it very difficult, especially in the wintertime, to get to Ontario, which is on the Idaho border, yes. So what issues did you have with phone calls?
They're just above average expensive. It's kind of like price gouging. It's just that they feel like they're allowed to charge more. They can capitalize on that because we don't really have a choice. Some of our rights have been stripped, and they're going to capitalize on that.
What were your thoughts about coming out and knowing you were going to or wanted to reconnect with your children?
Well, I was very excited to rejoin my family. and pick up where we left off in a more pro-social sense. I wanted to be a proactive parent. I did a lot of things carrying up to that. I took a parenting class. A lot of active listening skills were kind of employed, and I was eager to practice those with my family. So there was a lot of excitement in me.
So you were released.
You know, Karen, I gave it the slow approach. I thought it was important in order to reconnect in a healthy way, to get a solid foot in the community in terms of work, aftercare, and just to get a better sense of who I am and what I am going to expect based on what I can see. It's one thing to have a vision as to what you would want, and then to actually compare that to what's really going on, you have to kind of recalibrate. So that's what I was experiencing when I first came home, was where would I fit into this new family dynamic, because we change as we grow in whichever direction. I abandoned my family when I went to prison, and they experienced a lot as well as I did being in prison. So I had to take that into account as well. My oldest daughter, who's just turned 17, was kind of nervous. Some other input that she'd had on what people look and act like when they release from prison, or that we have no more control. So we just kind of go crazy with all that is offered to us in the society, freedom of choice, so to speak. We can't make our decisions properly. So she was really nervous. So I had to establish a new relationship of trust with her.
And Gary, what was your experience knowing you were being released? And did you have communication or connection with your children?
While I was in prison, my oldest daughter reconnected with me. I have three children. I have a 21-year-old daughter, a 14-year-old son, and a 9-year-old daughter. And all of those relationships were severed in 2005, legally in 2006, with my youngest kids. Because I was in prison and choices that I had made leading up to that, my parental rights were actually taken with regard to them. My son is still so angry with me. He has absolutely no interest in ever being in touch, I don't think. But my oldest daughter, though, on her own, wrote me and made efforts to reconnect with me. And since I've been released, we've been reestablishing a relationship. It's good and it's difficult. It's a tricky thing, because even when I was there toward the end of 2004, 2005, when I was there, I really wasn't present in any sort of a capacity in the relationship like a dad should be.
So what were your thoughts leading up to being released and reconnecting with your children?
I was kind of flooded with some uncertainty and a desire to do things differently. I'm in the process of reestablishing relationships with family members, most specifically my oldest daughter. It's interesting to me to get other people's takes on it, to see it from her perspective. But I also am trying to be realistic about things, and not push or anything like that, because I know that I need to show a difference, or I need to show myself to be doing better things to, redeem myself maybe.
Need to have a track record before you feel she'll trust again?
Something like that, yes.
So Curtis, tell us about your relationship with your daughter now.
Karen, it's been about 8 months since I've been back into the lives of my family. And what I've kind of did in terms of priority was school and health for my children, and kind of being the one to take them to their appointments and their schools, being the one to drop them off, to be the present parent. And that allows me time to kind of talk with them, process some of the things, share some of my experiences and how I was able to cope. And I don't really want to be the one to tell people what they should do. I just share my experiences and what's worked for me. It's built a pretty strong relationship with my daughter and I, one of trust. I see a lot of myself in her.
Curtis, so what was Father's Day like for you?
Father's Day morning was wonderful. I work in the afternoon and evening, and I'm a pretty dedicated employee. So the family just kind of surprised me, as they usually do with birthdays, and they bring me all kinds of beautiful gifts and hugs and love and great conversation. And I'm okay with it. Don't get a word in edgewise, because I just get overwhelmed with the love and support.
And Gary, what was Father's Day like for you?
Kind of disconnected, but good. I don't know what I could have expected. My daughter lives in Grants Pass. She is in touch regularly, though, and she does think of me more often than I might think she would. So overall, it was good, although from a distance.
So Curtis, you said that parenting classes you took while incarcerated were helpful in coming home and reconnecting with your family, especially your daughter. What other programs were helpful during your incarceration that you can point to? You are now in the community, 8 months now, Curtis, and successful. You haven't violated conditions of parole. What do you attribute your success to?
There's been a lot that I've experienced in the past year of my incarceration and 8 months of my release. There's an organization that I encountered called Phoenix Rising Transitions, and they're very important to me because what they did was they put a lot of wind in my sails. They helped to take away from me a lot of thick skin that I had, helped me to decide what to look for in myself, what to build on in that respect. And they've given me great opportunities to give back. That's very important to me. It keeps me busy, which keeps me from looking for trouble. It's empowering. It shows that I can make a difference, and that builds on my self-esteem. It shows to my family and community that I can be trusted. And I think that's very important. What I did most recently through an organization called Metropolitan Alliance for Common Good. I know that you know who they are. For anybody that doesn't, maybe they should just Google MACG. But I was trusted with just a few $100s. But just to be trusted with anybody else's money meant a lot to me. I was asked to cater one of their leadership trainings. So, you know, to be trusted with organization and money, I thought was pretty nice. This is just one of the many transitional options available for anybody coming home. If they choose to walk on the light side for a while instead of that oh-so-attractive dark side, you know, you'll get farther, you'll do better, and you'll become greater.
And you said Phoenix Rising Transitions, you connected with them inside. And what programs do they have, and what was that like?
They offer a few things, actually. They have a nonviolent communication curriculum that they provide. Not so much anger management as it is civil communication. It kind of showed me a way to understand another person a little clearer, if not through probing or putting myself in their shoes, you know, just to understand that maybe my words are falling on them a little rough and I could speak different and create a greater line of communication. Other things like leadership trainings inside. They also provide great support in the community for whatever I feel would be beneficial to my transition and recovery, whether it be meetings, spiritual aspects. The organization itself does not really urge you to seek out one particular thing. They just support you in what you choose to seek out. I can't say enough about the wind in the sails. You know, I spent probably 40 years with no wind in my sails. And then through the programs that I've actively sought since my incarceration, I've heard more in that short time than I have my entire life.
And 8 months after release, are you still involved with Phoenix Rising Transitions?
Yes, very much so. I'm excited to be. They're helping me with housing, transitional resources, moral and emotional support.
And Gary, were there any programs that you can point to inside that helped with your transition back to the community?
The DOC didn't offer any program to me that aided or assisted me in any way.
Do you mean there wasn't anything available or couldn't connect, or what do you mean?
Their alternative incarceration programs have criteria, time remaining on your sentence, time spent in. I didn't meet any of the criteria to be eligible for the programs. So they exist on some level, but I never was given the opportunity to avail myself to any of those programs.
So, Gary, you feel the prisons did not offer any programs that were helpful to you, or you didn't meet the criteria. But you were involved with Phoenix Rising Transitions, correct?
Yes. I became involved with Phoenix Rising Transitions at Columbia River Correctional Institution here in Portland and remained in contact with them after I was transitioned to another prison in Salem. But what I really got from the Phoenix program, specifically on the inside, was perspective, both in being encouraged, seeing people who had stood in my shoes and had broken their criminal cycle through various means or just different paths of that, as well as meeting people from who had never had any sort of involvement with the criminal justice system, and to kind of get a perspective that pressures are universal, that the same stresses exist for everyone, but between stimulus and response there exists a choice, and that that's kind of where what Phoenix did for me is to give me a door into that, a little bit of insight into myself and understanding like why I had done things that I may have done or made lazy decisions.
And are you still connected with Phoenix since you've been released?
I am actively involved with lots of Phoenix programs and nonviolent communication and every other piece of the Phoenix program outside as well. They've aided me with transitional housing. Their mentorship program has been invaluable to me, having two mentors to bounce life stresses off of in transitioning back to the community. Even just the nuts and bolts of getting into school. I'm going to Portland Community College, and there was a lot. They were so there for me on, yes, I'm actively involved with Phoenix.
Let's talk a little bit about House Bill 3194. You're talking about the importance of community reentry programs such as Phoenix Rising Transitions. So this is a way of reinvesting our public safety dollars and spending them more in community services than incarcerating people for long periods of time. You both went down to speak to your legislators about prison reform here in Oregon. Partnership for Safety and Justice had their lobby day. I think we were all down there for that one. And then some of us testified in support of House Bill 3194. Tell us what you said to your legislators.
I spoke a little bit about my story. Basically, that's just kind of in a nutshell what I stated earlier about not having any wind in my sails. It was rather strange for me to come out of prison to this support from new friends through Phoenix Rising. I think that if the money were made available, you would be amazed at the programs that come out of it and the miracles that would happen in the community in terms of relapse and recidivism and how that would decline.
And if Phoenix was not there available supporting you, where do you think you'd be today?
That's hard to say. I think I would be struggling. I think I would be okay, but I'd have a lot of things in me, a lot of thoughts and feelings. Gary's my roommate, and I can talk to him anytime because Phoenix provided a place for us to live in a transitional housing situation. I don't know that I would come out with such support. I might have to find a way to make fast money. You know, I would get away with it for some time. I would still be breaking the law, I imagine, even though I got away with it. I would be victimizing people in some form or other, wouldn't I? Whether it be tax dollars, enabling addicts, not being a proper parent to my children, being absent because I always had to hustle. You know, there's a whole spectrum there.
And Gary?
When I went down, I talked a little bit about my experience with underfunded transition programs. I'm not proud to tell you this is the second time that I've been released from prison. And my experience has been drastically different in having a more holistic kind of support from Phoenix Rising that's not just 90 days of housing, but is an entire program kind of geared towards attacking the root causes of what your erroneous thinking, if you want to use such a trite saying, is and what led you to the choices that you've made. I mentioned to the commission some things that they're already aware of, that, you know, save $8 to $11 for every dollar invested in a transition program because, you know, 95% of people in prison are released from prison and then have to get back into their community by some means or other, or turn into more expensive, over-incarcerated people.
And I personally spoke before the Joint Committee on Public Safety in April in support of House Bill 3194. And my family member is dually diagnosed and committed a Measure 11 crime, robbery 2, and was sentenced to 60 months in prison with a mental illness and an addiction. Did not receive treatment, decompensated, his mental state worsened, and as I said to the committee, he just sat in prison for 6 years. Oregon spent $30,000 a year for a total of $180,000 for him to just sit in prison. And this is what the original package looked at, changing some of those Measure 11 laws, and that has since been thrown out of the House Bill 3194 package. They looked at changing sex abuse 1, assault 2, and robbery 2. There will not be any changes to Measure 11.
I can say something about that because I just was in prison for 2 robbery 2s, only one of which was really a robbery. The other was just like an aggravated scuffle that could, if such a crime as aggravated shoplifting existed, could be more properly termed that. The problem with those crimes is that they can be so broadly applied. I would meet young kids in the penitentiary and in the 5 minimum custody prisons that I visited where they had basically gotten into a fist fight, but because a bloody nose was the result, they then met the statute and were then sent to prison for 70 months for their first offense. And the whole point when Measure 11 was conceived was to combat, you know, repeat offenders, career criminals, violent offenders like that. And it's failed. Both the youngsters who are in prison and the taxpayers who are paying for the youngsters to be in prison for that, you know, in the story that I just relayed. But for any of those things, it's extremely expensive. I just don't understand how it could be sustained. The J curve of prison growth in Oregon is not sustainable.
We lost that. We lost any changes to Measure 11. It was taken out of the package.
But I would hope that there's still some version of 3194 that would fund transition programs both on the inside and on the outside, just pre-release and post-release, to aid people getting back into the community. Because without Phoenix Rising Transitions, I wouldn't be standing where I am now. I wouldn't have been able to release the way that I did to the place that I did, to immediately begin, you know, getting a college education, staying, you know, clean and sober, crime-free, any of that. I think that that is essential, and I think that that need, they're woefully underfunded transition services at all. Alternative incarceration programs, any of the other pieces of 3194, all of that needs funding. Drug treatment, what is it, 70% of people in prison have addiction problems. But those, like I mentioned, the programs that exist, even if you're there, and I have probably 40 drug felonies, and I still somehow never was even offered the option of, you know, we think this treatment might help you.
So we're going to hear David Rogers now. My interview with him this morning about the House Bill 3194. I'm here with David Rogers, Executive Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice. So, David, I understand Partnership for Safety and Justice has been camping out at the Capitol in Salem, working toward prison reform here in Oregon. Give us a little history of House Bill 3194. How did we come to this point?
Sure. Well, how we got here was 2 years ago, Governor Kitzhaber created his Commission on Public Safety. And really what he did was he charged the Commission on Public Safety to essentially come up with a set of recommendations to try and make our public safety system much more effective while also significantly reducing the growth of the prison system. He really came at this with a recognition that we can't continue to spend hundreds of millions of dollars of additional money kind of building and filling prisons. And he wanted to address that. And it was a pretty ambitious and bold agenda. It included things like trying to create a set of recommendations that would flatline prison growth over the next 10 years, over the next decade, and then through sentencing and corrections reforms. And then to take a portion of those savings that we would get from reduced kind of reliance on prisons and to invest that into smarter approaches to public safety. So front-end prevention-oriented programs like addiction treatment, mental health programs, drug courts, reentry programs to help people succeed, and community-based victim programs as well. And to create more of a reliance on community supervision, community corrections, rather than state incarceration. So that was the goal. The commission, after 2 years of work, created a set of 19 recommendations that they released in December of last year. And that really has created the platform for the legislature to try and then take this up in this 2013 session. And I would say there's been some really good work happening. There's been a tremendous level of support from around the state. But these issues, the politics are challenging. We're kind of at the end of the game here in terms of the 2013 session. And we're already beginning to see some things that we think are really important reforms slide away.
What are some of those that we have lost?
The last time the set of amendments to House Bill 3194 emerged, both of them excluded any reforms to Measure 11, which is deeply disappointing. I mean, really, that's one of the places that it is most in need of reform, as far as we're concerned. And so at this point, I would say the governor has been engaged in pretty significant negotiations with the District Attorneys Association. And we're concerned that, in fact, other things are being peeled away. We're in the kind of the final stretch here. And the way the negotiations are heading, we might see a bill move forward, but we think that it'll be much less impactful. If something moves the way it's looking right now, they're looking at more of a 5-year flatlining of prison growth rather than a 10-year. So, you know, they're kind of trying to kick the ball ahead a little bit. That's largely, I think, because of the governor's decision to negotiate very exclusively with the District Attorneys Association. And frankly, DAs, they don't want anything to happen because they recognize that part of the changes that really would make the system more effective is for them to give up some of their power.
So where is House Bill 3194 in the legislative process?
It's tricky. I think that right now the Joint Committee on Public Safety, which was a special committee that was designed to push this agenda forward, they got to move something out of the committee and they need to do it quickly. At this point, our sense is that if they do, the bill would move first through the House for a vote and then over to the Senate. And, you know, I mean, we've got roughly maybe 2 weeks left in the session. So, you know, we're going to have to see something kind of begin to move this week, I think, if things are going to move at all. And I have to say, as depressing as this may be, we're in danger of something not moving at all. And I think that right now is the time to really put the pressure on the legislature. Email your reps and your senator and let them know they've got to push a public safety reform agenda forward.
So how could people get involved? David, give your website. How can they sign up for Partnership for Safety and Justice action alerts?
Our website is www.safetyandjustice.org. Things are changing down at the Capitol on a sometimes an hourly basis. We're completely dialed in. We got to make it happen this week. So I'd say the best way to be involved and support change is to dial in, sign up for action alerts, and when you get one, definitely respond and respond quickly.
So guys, what do you think? Do you have a message for Prison Pipeline listeners about House Bill 3194?
If you don't already know, find out what district you're in, call your senator, call your representative, fund transition services.
I just read on the wall, it's actually on the Justice Center in downtown Portland, and it every time I went to the Justice Center, which was many times, I've been to prison 3 times. I'm not so embarrassed by it because it's made me who I am today, and I'm quite proud of who I am today. But the quote that I don't recall who it was from, but the quote says, "Evil flourishes where good people do nothing." Now, we are the good people, and we need to make change. We're sorely lacking prison reform, and we need to start this process. The only prison reform we've had would be to build new ones. And we've done nothing in terms of cognitive restructuring, you know, support, recovery, just general mental health issues. People, we need to address the issues.
So again, call your legislators. Thank you, Curtis Beercub and Gary Griffin.
Thank you for having us, Karen.
It was a pleasure.
You have been listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Thank you to our engineer, Danielle Parks. Good night.
San Quentin, you've been living hell to me. You blistered me since 1963. I've seen them come and go, and I've seen them die. And long ago I stopped asking why. San Quentin, I hate every inch of you. You cut me and you scarred me through and through. And I'll walk out a wiser, weaker man. Mr. Congressman, you can't understand.
And it is 7 o'clock p.m., Monday, June 17th, 2013. This has been Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Portland. Coming up next is tonight's broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, followed at 8 p.m. by A Different Nature. Stay tuned.
Peace, this is Mike Crenshaw. I want to invite you to come out to see Long Distance Revolutionary, a documentary about Mumia Abu-Jamal. This film chronicles his life as a revolutionary, a writer, a journalist, a philosopher, and an inspiration to people worldwide. It's showing June 14th at the Clinton Street Theater. That's a Friday night
at 7 p.m.
That starts the week-long run of Long Distance Revolutionary in Portland. KBOO is proud to bring you this event, and I hope to see you there.
And that's one of the things that constantly surveilling people and constantly communicating to them that they're powerless before this omnipotent government corporate institution does to people. It convinces them that the tiny little